Welcome back. 4:17, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. And I'm joined now by Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
Busy day for you. I've seen your work popping up at WashingtonTimes.com throughout the day, including one about the menu today at the big lunch.
Yeah, you know, I think we've talked about, I have a bit of an obsession about what the president eats, and today it was a 3,000-calorie lunch menu, according to a website that went ahead and crunched the numbers on it. So it's, what's sort of funny is that, you know, it's sort of lucky that the president doesn't have to abide by his own health law and post the number of calories on the menu, which I imagine might have scared off a number of the folks who were there dining with him.
Yeah, and it goes against everything Michelle Obama has told us.
Yes, no, that's true. Although I will, in their defense, I will say that the last time I did a story like this about one of the state dinners and calculated that it was somewhere above 2,000 calories for the dinner, I talked with a couple of nutritionists, and they made the point, well, you know, special occasions, it's okay to splurge, and I guess it's safe to say that this is about as special an occasion as it gets. So maybe a one-time exemption here.
Yeah. All right, I've been checking out some of the stories that you've posted, and one was entitled, Obama Faces a Daunting 4 Years as He Takes the Reins for a Second Term. And, you know, I guess that's very true. You know, it all started out with him joking with his daughters about the swearing in, which was botched last time, and now he's got to pick up where he left off. And in fact, we don't know exactly which path he'll take in the coming days and months.
Yeah, though I think we probably got a little bit of a clue about it from his inaugural address today. A really broad sort of a broad call. I actually sort of compare it to, it's essentially a reevaluation and a modernization, if you will, of the Constitution. You know, the Constitution according to Barack Obama, and he was quite explicit. You know, we started off with the founders' vision of overthrowing a tyrant in 1776. But since then, you know, we've learned that we need Social Security. We've learned that the economy can't be laissez-faire. We actually have to have, you know, the government has a role in putting restrictions on the economy. We've learned that we need to give essentially transfers to poor people in order to help build them up. You know, it was very much a very interesting speech and very much an updating, sort of the living Constitution, as the term has come to be called, as the embodiment through President Obama.
Yep, and that's exactly what, in fact, I just jotted that down. I guess he was referring to the living document known as the Constitution.
And this was, you know, a very stirring speech and probably one of the best encapsulations and summaries of that living Constitution and where the liberal, the liberal legal view, you know, this is a guy who taught constitutional law at University of Chicago, where the liberal legal view views the Constitution in the 21st century. And, you know, for all of those things, a very interesting speech. Most important, though, I think, is just the tone he struck. Republicans up here are not calling it combative. They're actually being fairly gracious in saying, you know, it's aspirational. But there's no question that the number of things that he ticked off, very pointed battles with Republicans, it was more combative than I would have expected.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was somewhat surprised because it really was an all-encompassing speech. He talked about gay rights. He talked about climate change. And in fact, part of it even sounded like a campaign speech. And now we understand the campaign is continuing, but, just under a different name and a different, nonprofit status, I guess.
Sure. No, I mean, you know, nobody should be surprised that's what he does best, and he's proved that. I actually was thinking about this weekend, that if you think about from 2003, which is essentially when he first began running for the U.S. Senate, till now, of those 10 years, he has been in campaign mode for 8 of them. The only 2 years that you could say maybe he wasn't were the first 2 years after he won the Senate in 2005 and 2006. But even then, he was already laying the groundwork for the 2007 and 2008 primaries and in the election. So, you know, this is a guy whose life has been lived, at least on the national stage, as a campaigner, and it's clearly something, you know, based on that track record, it's something he's really good at. He hasn't proved to be so good at doing the cajoling and the wheedling with members of Congress to get them to buy into what he wants through deal making, but he has proved to be really good at connecting with voters and asking them to make their views known. And so, given that, you know, he might as well do what his strength is. And his strength is going straight to voters and saying, hey, you all believe in me, now make your voices heard behind me. And that's what the campaign organization that he's transforming into a nonprofit lobby group, that's what that's all about. And it's what today was about as well. And, he made that explicit call. I need your voices in this debate.
Yeah, and we heard that over the weekend in his plea to voters and supporters to get on board with this gun control issue. That'll be number one. I'm assuming immigration comes right behind it.
Yeah, actually, if you talk with Harry Reid up here, the majority leader of the Senate, he actually places immigration as the top priority for his chamber. It'll actually be interesting to see which does actually come first. I think they both might come right about the same time. Immigration is a much broader sort of issue, and that probably takes a little longer to write that bill. But we're going to start having hearings on both those issues in early February in the Senate, and the House is basically waiting to see what happens on both of those. They're talking debt and deficits and spending. You know, one of the things these guys love to talk about being able to walk and chew gum at the same time as sort of their cliche for saying, hey, Congress can do multiple things. But I have to say, having covered this place for 10 years, I find they actually can't do multiple things at the same time. So
yeah.
I think some of this will get left on the floor as they do deal with the budget and the annual spending bills, especially since they have to redo last year's spending bills here at the end of March. They never actually did this year. The 2013 spending bill. So we're going to have a lot of debate on spending, and the question is how much of the rest of that agenda gets included in there.
Yeah. I want to take you off of this story for a minute. Over the weekend we heard, and today I guess they made it official, Republicans in the House are willing to kick the debt ceiling down the road a bit if they can get a budget. And yesterday I heard people like Chuck Schumer on Meet the Press say, hey, we as Democrats, we want a budget this year. What do you know about that?
Well, so that's exactly right. It was, I guess I'd say, a major concession, you know, the latest in what's become a string of concessions from House Republicans in saying that they will not use the debt limit as a cudgel to win actual specific cuts. Part of their, the stick that they've included in this bill that they're actually going to put through the Rules Committee tomorrow and then on the floor here later this week in the House, the one that says no budget, no pay, the stick there is saying, okay, if you guys don't pass the budget, we are going to, we're going to withhold pay from all lawmakers until a budget passes. In my reading of the Constitution, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but that seems pretty clearly to violate the 27th Amendment. I've heard important folks up here say it doesn't, but so given that, I imagine we'll probably not. That'll be a tough thing to get through the Senate, that actual particular part. Having said all that, Republicans' point is probably pretty well taken by the American people, which is okay. If you don't pass a budget, why should you get paid? You know, maybe we don't actually see that specific policy in place, but the sentiment is going to hold, especially since we're about, if they don't, it would be the fourth year in a row without a budget from the Senate. If we get to that point, you know, I think that does play into Republicans' hands. Maybe gun control and immigration sort of fall behind the need to actually get a budget done this year. And, you know, when Schumer said that yesterday, it took a number of Republicans up here by surprise. They all had heard essentially not much interest in doing a budget. Folks saying, yeah, we might get around to it from Democrats earlier. And so when Schumer said that, to many of them, it seemed like revisionist history. It's also, you know, it's a challenge for Democrats. Yeah, they have a few more members this time around, so it should be slightly easier than the last time with 55 people in their caucus. But still, getting all 55 of them or 50 of those 55 to agree on a budget is going to be a major hurdle.
Yeah. All right. One more thing before I let you run today, and that is 4 years ago, almost to the day, the president made his first promise. Gitmo would be closed within a year. Refresh my memory. Why didn't that happen?
And this is probably, it didn't happen because of bipartisan opposition in Congress, and that's, you know, now that Republicans actually control one chamber of Congress, that's sort of the, you know, a good caveat to remember on a day when president is, this day is all about the president. But Congress, when bipartisanship breaks out there, they are still able to thwart him, as powerful as he is. And Gitmo is sort of the perfect example of that. They, you know, together, Republicans and Democrats looked at each other and said, no, the war on terror is ongoing. We need to have a place to stash these folks, and they have so far thwarted him and probably made it impossible for him to close it over the next 4 years as well.
But he still wants to close it, right?
He still wants to, but even after he signed the defense policy bill there at the end of last year, that made it almost one of his auto pen signatures, I believe. That made it almost impossible for him to get that done. It's just, you know, at that point, that takes you through the first year of the second term. Even if you were to actually begin to ramp up a way to close it, it's going to, at this point, take several years to get it closed. So that's probably going to be a promise he's not going to keep after 8 years of his term.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for your help today. Appreciate it very much. Now, go on home and recreate today's lunch, okay?
I'm going to do that at some point. Not today, but at some point I will try that. I imagine more than 3,000 calories is probably a couple hundred dollars per serving.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, Stephen, thanks.
My pleasure.
Take care. Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor, 428, 730 AM, 102.9 FM, WTNT.